Yeah, I think one thing I probably learned tonight watching the game is that I can't just run onto Tad Furlong and tackle him. He might step me. He looks like a really mean stepper there.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Hello and welcome to House of Rugby here on Joe. We've no Emer tonight, but we have Ronan O'Mahony from Munster and Chris Henry back. How are you, lads?
Yeah, great, thanks, yeah.
I'm good, Fark.
Good to have you on. Do you know what, before we get into the rugby stuff and straight into the Ireland-Scotland performance and the talking points, I was in a news agency yesterday and I saw one of the headlines was sport behind closed doors for a year. So it's been a year now where sport has been behind closed doors. And it actually kind of popped into my head. And I know I finished like just recently, but you guys are not so long finished either. And it kind of popped into my head, I don't know, it's great to have the rugby going ahead, but all the other things that are taken away from players at the moment, whether it's guys just starting off in their careers or guys finishing, or just your normal squad member where they don't have that time together outside of training and outside of playing at the weekends. It's literally go train, play the matches and go home. Like how important do you think that is? And it must be such a strange time for the boys at the moment with that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think since I've retired, it's the thing I've missed the most is being around your teammates and your friends. And you know, yes, you play games with each other and you get to trust each other, but you learn so much about people, obviously, off the pitch, going for coffees, going for, you know, the beers after you win or lose. I think it is a... Obviously, it's a challenge for everyone. Everyone's facing different things. But if you're talking about purely from a rugby perspective, rugby careers are short. And it's a completely different dynamic to build that team camaraderie and you know, great team atmosphere. It does take a couple of pints to get to know each other properly. So the time away from the rugby pitch is really important. And the players will be feeling the challenges of this at the moment.
Yeah, 100%. And we always used to say a good team social is better than any week's training. That's especially at the start of the season, you have your new players in, you have your young academy players coming into the senior ranks, and you have a couple of foreign signings coming in. And I suppose it's those early couple of nights out, and as you talked about having coffees together, that you really get to kind of bind the squad and get to know everyone. And then I suppose a lot of the younger players are missing out in the crowd and experiencing a full stadium. Joe, I was doing commentary there for the game in Tobin Park against Scarlett's just gone, and there's an eerie silence around the place, and you know, there's a lot of young lads who are making their debuts, and you'd wonder how different their debut might go with a full crowd there and in front of 30,000 people or 40,000 people. And you know, it's an experience, I suppose, as a young player that you want to get as well.
Or even, you know, you'd Billy Holland hitting that milestone the other week, or Craig Casey getting first cap for Ireland. No one being there, and that's the worst thing about it, they don't have family there. But then even after, to not even have a celebration, it's just you go home to your couch, and it's pretty grim. But it's just crazy to think it's been a year, you know, and how used to it we've gotten.
Yeah, and as you've seen in the Irish games, he just standing running out for his 50th appearance, but he's kind of running out for the cameras, but not, you know, it would be nice to be able to run out in front of a crowd and in front of some family. But yeah, it's been a pretty strange year.
And even for like someone like yourself, who, you know, you get the good players who come into the end of their careers and having to retire, you know, I only know from speaking to past friends from the Ulster team, like last year's team end of season dinner that you'd usually have, you know, big function, they had to do it over Zoom. So someone like yourself, I don't know how your end of career finished with Leinster, but you know, I'm sure it wasn't the usual proper. No one gets a proper send off, but you do expect to be able to sit down and have a dinner with your teammates and give a, you know, a final speech and a rake of pints. How did your send off go?
Well, it didn't quite have the blimp going through the Aviva like Draco, anyway, that's for sure. it was bizarre, to be honest, because, you know, 14 years or whatever it was in the squad, and we had just lost to Saracens on the Saturday, and I wasn't picked for that match, so I watched it at home because he didn't bring any extras obviously at that stage, and realised that that was my last day in Leinster, was us losing that match because my contract was rolling if we got to the final. And kind of hit me at home. I remember getting upset with my wife, and there's no one, mates or anyone around obviously, and getting a few texts from people. But then on Monday, me and Rob Kearney went in, and Leo asked us if we wanted to come in, because just to do the review, which is obviously going to be grim, you're getting knocked out of the Irish Cup. But he said if we wanted to talk, to just say our goodbyes in front of everyone, staff and players. And yeah, two of us stood up separately and had five minutes or so to just talk about what it meant playing for the club and all the memories and the bonds, etc. And then after, we just walked out of the building and just left and went home. And like, it's pretty, it was not exactly how I pictured it finishing up. Like, I haven't been able to, like, you know, catch up with any of the players really since it was such a strange time. But it's the world we live in, and just seeing those younger guys coming in at the moment and those like getting their first caps, whether it's provincial or international, we all know how much it feels to get that and not have share in those moments with family. And it's just, it's pretty tough. But we'll move on to the Scotland-Ireland game here quickly and talk about a few things. So obviously a great for Ireland to get back to winning ways. What did you make of the game?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think going into the game, we knew it was going to be close. I think obviously at one stage, everyone was thinking a draw would have been a fair result. You know, Johnny Sexton, as usual, stepping up and you know, when the moment mattered and kicked a really, really difficult kick and a high pressure moment. But I think, look, Ireland had a really, really good game. There were certain aspects where, you know, they won the 50-50 battles. The aerial contest was a massive part of the game, I felt. You know, some great kick chases and contesting in the air, which obviously led to one of Ireland's tries. But yeah, I just think like it was a step forward than Italy. It was a bigger challenge, obviously. I think on a different day, maybe with Finn Russell going off at 60 minutes, it could have gone a different way. But ultimately, Ireland, you know, they got the job done. They did what they needed to. They played the way they needed to beat a good Scottish team. So yeah, I think you know, credit to the team and the performance. And they've taken obviously a lot of pressure to going away from home to win in Murrayfield, which isn't easy to do. You know, hats off to them. It's great that we're sitting here, you know, talking so positive, because if a draw or a loss would have just put a totally, you know, really, really different spin on their Six Nations so far.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, like, the reality is that, you know, there was pressure mounting up a little bit on the coaches and you know, the expectation is so high in Ireland at the moment. So for them to get over the line, because people forget that, you know, it is an extremely strong Scottish side, but to win in that manner in Murrayfield, such a tough place to go. I think those finer margins, like I do think the back three, particularly Keith Earls and Hugo Keenan, like they're outstanding. Like, you know all about that pressure game with the way Munster play and the way their back three play and how good you were at it as well. What did you make of the performances in the back three from the Ireland guys?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty composed, like one or two little errors and a slip tackle by James Lowe give Scotland a small bit of hope. But other than that, you know, Earls's proven his worth time and time again. He's every time he gets an opportunity to play, he's outstanding, both for Munster and Ireland, and rightly deserves a new contract. And then I suppose Hugo Keenan has been a new lease of life for the Irish backline. You know, he's filled that void of Rob Kearney really well. He's performing outstanding, and you know, it's a credit to himself. And I think since he's got into the Irish squad, he hasn't even been budged. He's keeping Jordan Larmour, who's well established at this stage, off the team. And you know, as we talk about the conveyor belt coming through Leinster, and there's other players like young Jimmy O'Brien, who I was really impressed with, that will probably make his way into that Irish team soon enough. And from the game just gone, it was a pretty pleasing performance. Obviously a couple of slip tackles, but other than that, we'll take the win.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, you know, there's definitely Irish guys there. You saw Gatland in the crowd. There's Irish guys there that stuck their hand up, like, big time. Like, they really did. I think that if it wasn't for probably four or five guys playing for us today, like, we wouldn't have beaten them. The crucial turnovers, particularly at ruck time, Chris.
Well, every time you play Scotland, the breakdown's always a talking point. And I think that was definitely something that Ireland got the upper hand of today. You know, Scotland were at times, you know, they were making inroads, and Ireland's ability to get into the ruck so quickly and make crucial turnovers at crucial times was massive. You know, Ian Henderson obviously had that massive moment at the end of the game with a crucial penalty. You know, Tadhg Byrne, you know, I think he came off at 60 minutes and yet he still got man of the match. And, you know, leading into this Six Nations, to be honest, like, you know, obviously Tadhg with the Scarlets and Munster, you know what the quality has. But going to this next level, international level, you did. I wondered, was he going to be, you know, number six you want as your enforcer in your team? And I did think, is this where Tadhg should be? Well, he's definitely proved that this is where he should be. He's been outstanding. And he's just getting better and better. And he was everywhere today. Him and Ian Henderson and James Ryan, it's just a really good combination. And the breakdown was something special. Will Connors, I mean, he, for me, today was probably his best game for Ireland. I had a matchup with him and Hamish Watson. There was two absolutely crunching tackles he made on him during the game. And I don't know, whenever you guys played, like whenever you went in the match and you saw your opposite number and you knew you got a chance to put a hit on him or make a moment, to know that you came off and went, yeah, actually, I know I've got the better hand. And Hamish Watson had a brilliant game, but I think for what we needed, what Ireland needed today, from what Will Connors provided, he was everywhere. The tackling of the Scottish forwards, the chop tackling, obviously what he's known for, he was awesome today. So, as I said, Henderson, Byrne, Connors, I thought, again, someone who keeps on being talked about, who just keeps producing such a high level standard rugby is Robbie Henshaw. He doesn't do anything wrong at the moment. His kick chasing was brilliant. His ability to run straight and pass a ball, like simple things, but really difficult things. And he's just bringing a seriously high standard of rugby at the moment. And yeah, I just think, as I said, these players have had a lot of pressure and they've delivered, and breakdown had a big part of the play, the outcome today.
Yeah, Robbie's got to be in the mix, like going into the Lions. You know, I think he went on the last tour, but he was more of a tourist, and they didn't really play him in the test games. But he's been, you know, in terms of a 12, that's been playing consistently well for 12 months, and now he's doing it. Like, I know Tadhg Byrne is picking up the Man of the Match awards, and he has been great, but Robbie has been right there behind him in the back line. He has been doing everything so positive. But I think back to that point about Tadhg and Ian Henderson, and I know what you mean about switching him to six, but it feels like at the moment with Tadhg at six and Hendy obviously still in the second row with James, it's almost like we've got five back rows. Because like when we're defending there, and they might get over the gain line by a yard or two, but they're exposed and their cleaners aren't there quick enough. And then you have CJ Stander latching on, like a just incredible poach threat there across the board. And I think that was probably the winning of the game for Ireland, really, our decision making around it, because we know Scotland's such a tough place to go. And I just think that particularly CJ and Tadhg, like, and Munster have been so good there, but those guys were just so impressive, weren't they?
Unbelievably impressive. And I think in that Irish pack, you've just so many ground tags between Will Connors, Henderson, Tadhg Byrne and CJ, and then the likes of Porter, who's so good on the ground as well when he comes off the pitch, that, you know, if each of them can get one turnover in a game, that's five or six penalties. And if you look at the Scottish penalty count, just 10 plus, and at international level, if you're coughing up 10 plus penalties, you're going to find it difficult to beat any team. So with those lads on the side, and I suppose Henderson Henderson and James Ryan are such a good mix in the second row that you're trying to find a place for Tadhg Byrne, because he's such a competitor, such a good player. You always want him on your team because he's a great line out option. He's incredible. He's probably one of the best poachers in Europe. And he's a super
deliver pizza as well.
Yeah, he delivers pizza. Yeah, he's a pizza delivery man.
We're gonna have to tell the story about the pizza delivery one. We were talking before he came on, because just how impressive Tadhg has been. Like, he literally has been such. He's putting his hand up to go on the Lions. He really is, with the way he's played for Munster and Ireland. But he's certainly come a long way, because when he was in the Leinster Academy, for whatever reason, in fairness, he had a fair few injuries, but he was always really in the bibs, and he was often in the suit poaching, and he was getting, you know, smashed by the first when he was going and trying to poach the ball. And he used to always come out with two or three poaches a training session, which is unbelievably frustrating. But on a Saturday after a game, he was still in the academy, obviously, and he hadn't really got a chance at the first. And Sean Cronin was having a pizza, or I think he had played a game on a Saturday, and he had ordered a pizza from base or somewhere. And the doorbell goes, and Sean opens up the door, and Tadhg Byrne is there with the base hat on and his pizza, you know. And obviously Sean's going, you know, where's Jeremy Beadle? I'm getting stitched up here. He starts looking over his shoulder. He goes, mate, fuck off. Like, what are you doing here? And he goes, I'm here to deliver your pizza. Sean obviously panics, takes it off and goes inside, doesn't even give him a tip. So what a turnaround it's been for Tadhg Byrne. Here we are talking about him as a Lions player. Yeah. And he was previously delivering pizzas. But
he's if you ever play a match with Tadhg, he'll be in, like, he's the coolest, calmest character you'll ever meet. Like, he's as cool as a breeze. There's nothing really fazes him, and everything's kind of not a bother. And before a match, like, you'd be getting psyched up and getting everyone be in the changing room, getting their strapping done and shorts on, and you'd be looking over at Tadhg and he's still wearing his tracksuit, and you're like, oh, he'll get ready in a minute. And you'd genuinely be like 2 to 3 minutes before we're going out into the pitch, and Tadhg's still fully tracksuit on his phone playing like Angry Birds or something, just like, oh, better get changed now. And he just rocks into it, his demeanour, and then he just turns into a different character then on the pitch. He's, as we've seen today, like, he's just a different animal.
It's incredible. I always found those characters kind of fascinating. Like, there was always one or two guys that were on, like, they'd have their boots on about to huddle up to go out, and they'd be playing Candy Crush, you know, and you're going like, we're about to go out and get our heads kicked in here, what's going on?
Yeah.
It's funny the different rituals guys have leading into games. But in terms of both teams today, like, obviously we mentioned Gatland was there. I kind of think that the Johnny Sexton Finn Russell debate has been put to bed. You know, it certainly has been put to bed today, and I don't really know if there was a debate. For me, leading into it, just with how Johnny managed the game, I think even that moment in the second half where it looked like Scotland were, they had enough time to get properly back into it, and they had that penalty inside their half, and Russell overkicks it. Like, and I know it can happen, but it doesn't happen to Johnny Sexton. Do you know what I mean? I don't think
it has happened. It did not happen on the early games with Johnny. Kicked the ball. Was it dead? He did kick the ball. Dead. Was it? No. Billy did it. I know Billy did it. Or we know Billy did it. But I think Johnny not do one before at the end of a first half in one of the matches where
a penalty.
Yeah, for down the line. Yeah, went too far. Maybe France. Maybe not. Very rarely. The fact
against France, he missed one. But
yeah,
did he miss one?
Uh-huh. Your point is 100% right. Like, Johnny is by far the coolest, calmest 10 there is around this spot. But Finn Russell, like, you have to give it to him.
That
creates, like, I mean, what he did today, moments of magic creates around him, doesn't it? So I think if the Scotland lineup didn't completely implode, you know, we'd have had more chances to go at Ireland. I think that, I mean, if you had to pick one moment, one thing, yes, Irish breakdown was outstanding and Ireland definitely deserved it. But if Scotland's line-out functioned, you've got to say that they should have put more shots against Ireland. I don't know what the percentage win of the line-out was, but if you're playing international rugby and you're not hitting, you know, 85-90% of your own line-out ball, then you're going to struggle. And the Irish defence caused them to make the mistakes. Yes, there was problems with the Scottish throw and just the general functioning, but to say it was completely Ireland's dominance, I don't think is right. I don't think any player playing the pitch, I think every Irish forward would have seen that usually Scotland have a decent line-out. Like, Johnny Gray is a serious operator, and he was off kilter today by running the line-out, and that had a big part to play in the result, I think, as well. It'd be naive to say that didn't.
Yeah, and I think it's horses for courses. Sorry, with the Johnny Finn Russell debate, because I get it. Like, you know, Finn Russell does stuff that Johnny doesn't do, but again, if you're going down to play South Africa in South Africa, of course you want to have someone like a Finn Russell at a stage of a game. Do you want him starting? Like, I look at it like that and I go, who's the guy? And I think he is, you know. But again, of course, I think he should be a tourist, but that's just my opinion. What do you think?
I don't know Johnny too well. I only played against him or briefly met him once or twice. You could probably speak better about this for him, but from speaking to the lads who would play with him, just what he brings leading up to a game and the week's training and the detail he brings into the side, I think stands for itself, you know. And then he more than likely produces every time on the pitch, but I think that the standards and the detail he brings during the week to get the team ready and in a position to play high level rugby is another key attribute of him. Like, so,
and the, how many big moments like today, you know, that kick. To kick that kick is not an easy kick, but for Johnny Sexton, it's just kind of expected that he was going to get it, didn't he? Because he's had so many, he's experienced, he's lived through so many of those massive moments. Just so important still. I actually was just driving when I was after the game, just thinking, like, how sore is he going to be tomorrow? You know, being the age he is and the physicality he still brings, like, it's going to take. It must just be so sore after these big test matches at the moment for him.
particularly when you're quite old, because the interviewer was actually poking a bit of fun at him afterwards. She's like, geez, you got a lot of grey hair there, hairs there, Johnny. He's just after knocking over the winning kick, and she's calling him a badger, you know. But do you know what? It was a great game in lots of ways, but probably not for the standard of rugby, and I didn't think the day really allowed that. Obviously, it's raining, it's Murrayfield. But I think, you know, Ireland did start that second half brilliantly, and I thought they came out of the blocks. But it was a little bit disappointing to let the Scots back in towards the end, in reality.
It was, and I suppose the difference between a player now and from being playing and being results-based to being a spectator like we were today, you want an entertainment factor as well. And, I suppose a couple of silly errors, like a charge down by Gary Ringrose, a header by Stuart Hogg, and a slip through the hands of James Lowe, and Ireland find themselves in a dogfight towards the end of the game, and a lot of these international games and a lot of these big games come down to small, fine margins, and it's little compounding errors like that can cost the team.
Yeah, definitely, and I think that I suppose the most positive thing about that was the way Ireland reacted when they did draw the game, because there's only 4 minutes left, and the guys are going to kick it off. And I suppose from that point, it was great to see the belief. And, you had young guys coming off the bench making a big input. Dave Kilcoyne, Carey brilliantly, was smashing rooks. Porter, obviously, and then Ryan Baird. But, that was a big moment.
Yeah, charge down and then, or the tackle, the follow-up tackle. I mean, he's an absolute athlete, obviously, and it was going to be great to see so much more of him. And then he did really well to actually make that tackle. And then instead of trying to fight and stay in there, he rolled so quickly, and it gave Ian Henderson a real good chance to do what he's so good at and attach himself to the ball. And it was really, really, obviously a big moment of the game. And look, there's loads of big moments of the game. A big talking point, obviously, is the something that you talked about in one of the other shows about, as a winger in Test match rugby, it's so different coming from the provincial to Test match, and someone that obviously had a tough enough day, James Lowe, I guess, with that tackle. He went high whenever he had a real opportunity, you guys will obviously talk more than me, but just to chop him down low. But there is the defensive qualities of a Test match rugby. You can't keep making those same mistakes, I guess, and maybe other players, if they've made those errors, they... Maybe not get another chance just as quickly. With Joe Smith, for example, if you made a mistake like that, rugby's all about being honest, and you have to you would have been brought up in the video review. So for me, I guess with my Ulster hat on, I guess is Jacob Stockdale. You could be someone I think that could be drafted straight in to start next week against England. And we'll talk more about England on the show, but he had a terrific 40 minutes against the Dragons at the weekend. With some really good counter-attacks that you'd expect from Jacob and good runs, but the thing with Jacob at the moment is he's making some really good defensive reads and he looks in serious condition, and that is defensive qualities, I think, is something that could probably be used in that left wing. And obviously then with a straight swap like that, you don't lose the left foot. It's a straight swap, but they're still...
What do you think for the left winger spot? Because realistically, Earlsey's getting picked again, he played a very good game. Do you think that he'll retain the back three, or would he change it up?
I'm not quite sure. I think he will retain it, just because the lads have been playing test level rugby and Stockdale hasn't, I suppose, over the last number of weeks. But I do agree with you that Stockdale's defence could be a good weapon for him. He likes to get really high on the outside, and we were chatting briefly for that. So the one slight criticism I would have of Irish defence is that I found they're a little bit passive. They're willing to give up plenty of yards to the Scots, and I'd like to see him fan out a bit more, and I'd like to see the wings and the 13s getting up a little bit higher on the outside and trying to make those reads, as we've seen with Jacob doing it with Ulster. Now, I know Ireland might be looking after line integrity rather than line speed, and that's kind of the way it looks a little, but going forward against England, I'd like to see him just get a little bit wider and coming off the line a little bit harder.
Yeah, definitely could be a work on, and listen, just great for us to get the 4 points and get the win and move on. Right, let's get Toulon and South African World Cup winner Eben Esabeth on the show.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Well, we'll find out next Saturday, won't we? We feel that we've been building. We feel that, you know, parts of our we feel that we were a little bit unlucky in the first couple of games, but we're playing against, you know, even though they've had a couple of bad results, you know, the team that was in a World Cup final, the team that won the Grand Slam last year, or Six Nations last year, the team won the Autumn Nations Cup, so they're a top team, and we have to prove that we can match them and put in a performance to beat one of the top teams, because we haven't done it as of yet.
Hey Evan, how are things, and welcome to House of Rugby, how are you?
No, I'm good, everything's good this side.
It's been tricky for us three actually, because we are retired, but the gyms are actually closed here, so our dad bods are kind of progressing a little bit quicker than we would have anticipated. And we were wondering, do you have any tips to keep in shape, get guns as big as you somehow?
No, you guys don't look too bad, but I'll send you something. I actually got this program from my one trainer. He was at the Stormers. He's now at Stade Français. He gave me a 15-day challenge with push-ups and pull-ups and all these things. Quite a tough one, so I'll try and get it over to you guys.
Well, we'd probably need that, I'd say.
Challenge accepted, Evan, eh? I think Fergal lead the charge. Evan, it's great to have you on the show. I actually phoned a mutual friend of ours, Marcel Kutsia, whenever I heard you were coming on the show. And he, I hope you don't mind, he told me quite a funny story. So you can correct the details after I finish. But he was saying how you guys used to room together on the tours an awful lot, obviously very close. And he mentioned that, like a lot of rugby players, we'd like to be organised and tidy and, you know, a bit of an OCD. And he said that you're very much like that. You like to be organised and have your room clean and tidy. And so he said that one evening he was making hot chocolates for you both, and you had popped out of the room and he'd set up the two mugs and he'd got the milk and the chocolate cocoa and he'd made the hot chocolates for you guys. But he dropped a bit of milk, so he just grabbed a white rag, wiped it up and threw it across the room. So a few hours later, he's asleep in bed and apparently he looks up and there's you standing right over the top of him holding this white rag with muddy, all obviously muddy stained, going, "Did you wipe your arse with my favourite white rag that apparently you used, your favourite white cloth to make sure you clean yourself at night?" And he said you weren't talking for a couple of days after. So I'm not sure if you want to tell your side of the story. Is that true, pretty accurate, or did he just make it up?
No, some details he left out there. Yeah, obviously, the good man that he is, he made us a hot chocolate. I think it was his turn to make the hot chocolate. And yeah, anyway, later that night, I went for a shower and I got to my face cloth. And it was, by the way, my face cloth was like a red color. And so all the other towels, always in a towel, is white. So I don't know how he got confused with that. So got to my face cloth and I saw like it's just brown stuff everywhere. And your immediate thought was goes through your head is, what did he use it for? And yeah, then I just went over to him. The lights was off. He was already sleeping. I just said, probably didn't say the nicest words, but I asked him, what did it do to my cloth? And he said, no, but he thought it's one of the hotel's cloths. And I'm like, but all the cloths in hotels are always white. I don't know how did you make that mistake? But no, he's a good man. I must say, I missed him. Obviously, he's been struggling with injury a lot. So probably, yeah, one of my biggest mates at the Springboks. Not nice when he's not there. We always room together, have some fun stories. Probably a lot of stories I can't tell on the show.
No, you can, Evan, you can. We've been told that you can't tell the stories. So fire ahead.
No, I'll rather leave it out.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, we all have those stories as well with guys we've roomed with over the years. You get close with funny memories like that. But going back to your kind of background leading into rugby, Evan, and growing up in South Africa, what stage or age were you at when you kind of looked and maybe up to guys that were playing in South Africa and maybe realised that was kind of the path that you wanted to take?
Yeah. So my story started obviously at primary school. I did quite alright in primary school. I managed to get a bursary to go to high school, and then got to the high school, and all of a sudden I found myself in the team's B team. I'm going to try and make a long story short. Played on the 14, on the 15, on the 16 B team, and the school actually wanted to take my bursary away because I wasn't performing that day, so I was still in the back line. And yeah, I told them, okay, give me one more year. And then the next year, under 19s came. And yeah, I thought, listen, I've been playing B team. I actually spoke to my one friend. I've been playing B team the last 3 years. This year we're playing under 19, so we're playing with the guys a year older than us. Or am I going to find myself in the school's under 19 C team? So yeah, quickly got my head right and moved to Lock actually my first year under 19. And that year, had a good year, managed to get to the Western Province, almost to the last trials, got into the elite squad. And then the next year, played for Western Province under 18 Crane Week. So no, probably there I decided that I want to really give rugby a go. I must say, always got the backing from my family and my brother, and yeah, so it was a good decision. Managed to go to Stellenbosch and off the Western Province under 19s, and from there, another thing later on, and yeah, everything went well.
Yeah, I think it's gone okay so far, anyway. But so you just your rugby peers coming up through that would have maybe like played with you underage and then broke in to one of the super teams in South Africa. Who were those guys? Like, then where are they now? Are they still playing, or your peers?
Yeah, so we were actually a couple of guys who came from, I remember on the 19 Western Province team, we had, so Kutsoff was still under 18 that time, but he was a bit involved with the under 19, Steven Kutsoff. Frans Malherbe was the tight head of the under 19 team. It was me, and then the other lock is playing for, he's playing at the Lions for Alan van der Sluis. We had Sia Kulisi, we had Nazam Kaur, who's playing at the Bulls. So we had a pretty good team. So yeah, a lot of those guys went on to play professionally. Obviously, guys like Sia and Frans, and them I still see them often. We still play together. So it's nice to have that group who comes with you a long way, and you have memories from under 18. I remember a guy, Bongi Mutnambi, we played him against him under 19. He played for the Bulls. Quite a tough man. And then, yeah, he came to the Stormers, and we managed to win a couple of things together. So, I mean, incredible teammates and great friends off the field also.
Jacko Tate, did you play with Jacko Tate? Tate coming up?
With?
Jacko Tate.
Wait, Yakutata?
Yeah, oh, sorry, I'm not so good at the South African pronunciation. Sorry.
Yeah, I played a bit with him. Obviously, he was at the Lions. I think he was still in school when he played for the Lions Super Rugby. And then played a couple of test matches with him, and also at the Stormers for a bit. He's a good man, a good player. Good man for the team off the field also.
Yeah, because Ronan and Chris, I think, South Africans they seem to be more inclined to go to Ulster and particularly Munster, but you would have played with so many South Africans, I suppose, in your time in Munster. How did you find the guys, and which guys did you get on with best? And
I got on very well with Jacko, and still in touch with him quite a lot. When Rassi came in and coached us in Munster, he brought Jacko in. He brought him in as a medical joker for 3 months because we had an injury to Francis Saili. And he ended up signing a 2-year contract. He's such a good impact on the club. But I can remember his first couple of weeks. Yeah, as you said, he's a great man off the pitch as well. And he's a great man on a night out. And I remember he had a social down in Cork. And on the way home, it was Mike Sherry who was driving the car, and I was in the passenger seat. And Jacko was in the back seat, and he was staring out the window, and he was just amazed. He was talking about how beautiful Ireland was. And he was, now we were all hungover and borderline depressed, and Jacko was just in amazement, and he was looking out and he's looking at the cows, and he's like, should I go out and tackle a cow? And we were like, what? We barely know the man. He wanted to go out and tackle a cow, and we're like, and he's like, please, I want to go out and tackle a cow. It's like he wanted to prove himself to us. And but he was he's a strange character, but I suppose he acted as if he was like a defensive leader for us going forward. I suppose in all those games he he was unbelievable. He was exactly what we needed, a real talisman in the squad and like a defensive leader. And he was a great man, yeah, as you said, on and off the pitch.
Was a good tackle on the car? Or?
No, we didn't stop, thankfully. No. He probably would have tackled the cow if we let him.
Yeah, like even John de Villiers as well. Like he had such a big impact in Munster. I'm sure all of the guys, you mentioned Marcel there, Chris, but even Ruan Pienaar, like what he did, he would have played with Ruan as well. Plenty of times, Eben and like Ruan, what he did for Ulster was, I mean, he just...
Do you know, I think every South African that comes to the provinces, there's just a good natural fit. You know, their work ethic and what they bring to the provinces, it's just a good fit, you know. And a lot of them, you see, especially with Ulster, I'm not sure what you think with Munster, but they end up staying for very, very long times. You know, there's very few South Africans that will make the move and then decide, you know, once one contract cycles up, very few decide to move. They want to stay. The club wants them to stay, and their families, they embrace the culture, I guess, the Irish culture. They're very family oriented. So, obviously on the field they add so much, but off the field, the type of personalities and people they are, I haven't met one South African that hasn't fitted in well with their move across to Ireland. So I'm sure it'll be a relationship that continues moving forward as well.
Yeah, speaking of tackling the cow actually as well, there's the producers were putting together some detail on you before the show, and there's a few dust ups that you've had over the years. One good clip of you and Jim Hamilton from Scotland throwing a few punches, I think, over in Edinburgh. And then there's another one, I think it got 4.5 million views on YouTube with Lou de Jager. What exactly happened there, and who came out on top that time?
No, I can't actually remember being in any scuffle in my career, so I don't know what you're talking about. No, the one with Lewitt, we were playing obviously a big match against the Cheetahs at the time, and I remember I think he shouldered me off the ball or something like that, and yeah, just things just got into a scuffle. And I mean, he's a good man, he's probably one of the funniest guys in the team, he's had a laugh. We both have had a laugh after that incident. He's mentioned it a couple of times. Yeah, he's just, like I said, a funny man. But yeah, I mean, off the field, all good. I remember we were that game, and then we went to Springbok camp on the Sunday. Alistair Coetzee was in the coach, and he still made a joke about me and him if we're all okay now. He's a good man. I remember Jim Hamilton also, good one. He actually in the line out, and he just came to push me in my face out of the blue, and I snapped a bit, and luckily there was guys who came in between, and he got a yellow card, and I could stay on the field.
And he played it well. I think you said that you had a situation. Did you not say you were going to knock Evan's head off there one day?
Evan, I don't know if you remember, but in 2012, when you played in Dublin against Ireland, I was playing, and there was a kickoff, and JP Peterson was chasing the kick, and I was putting my eyes up to catch the ball, and he tackled me before the ball even got near my hands, and I went absolutely flying. And so penalty against JP, he got yellow carded, but I glanced up. I was pretty shooken at that stage, glanced up, and all the Irish forwards were like piling in towards you. So I looked up, and there's you with, like, it was Donegal Ryan, big Mike McCarthy was playing, Jamie Heaslip, and you had, I'm pretty sure you must have had about four of them all around you, just holding them all. And I glanced up going, oh God, am I going to have to jump in here as well? And our physio came over and said, oh no, Chris, just stay down and milk it. And I was like, yeah, no problems, I'll stay out of this one. I'll leave Evan and the boys to it. So,
that's awesome.
It was a big game. And the other thing to note about that match was apparently big Mike McCarthy, who has been on the show before, his biggest highlight of his rugby career is he has a video of himself on his phone. He shows to everyone about him putting in a emptying you, apparently, which I haven't seen, but apparently he shows it to everybody. So I don't know if you remember that when the Mike McCarthy maybe putting in a cheap shot. It was probably a cheap shot, maybe.
No, I remember the scuffle also. There's a picture where me and a guy, like, close, and our faces are like that, close to each other. So I think you can find a picture of that. And then that hit from Mike, I remember that really well. I still remember, okay, I got the ball. I think it was from a 10. And so I was just, it was about by the 22. And I just tried to go hit the line. And he just came out of the blue, like liberated me from the side. Great tackle, actually. If I ever see him in a bar, actually owe him a beer for that one. It was a real good hit.
Yeah, he was a big hitter. Do you find, though, I think, like, we can all vouch for this, that when, you know, at club level and internationally, when you're coming up against certain players, you know, they get highlighted during the week. I'm sure it happens for Toulon and South Africa as well. You know, the big ball carriers are the big kind of, the big drivers in the team, you know, in terms of energy and all the rest. And you would be one of those people, realistically, that teams would look at, you know, whether it's your line-out work or carry, and try and, you know, lay statements down. Like, do you find that happens a lot in games where guys are trying to get shots or get under your skin?
Yeah, I think there's always, I always say, like, if you try to target an individual, that that's where you might go wrong. I think you must look at a team in just like the whole forwards. Obviously, there's always one or two guys. I never know what the opposition, who they look at, or who they target. But I'm pretty sure they're always, especially at the start of my career, when I was in quite a few scuffles, probably to get under my skin, try and get a yellow card or penalties or something out of me. Must say, I didn't give away too many yellow cards. Probably lucky the refs liked me. But yeah, I think, these days, if we look up opposition, you obviously, you look at one or two guys and just give to the team who's a threat. But I mean, in the whole, you just look at the whole pack of forwards and what they bring and so on. So, yeah, it's just there's so much analysts going on these days. You know the opposition so well.
I know. And speaking of analysts, now that Paul O'Connell, you've played against him in 2012 and 2014. You had some big battles, and he's now an analyst for Ireland. And obviously Ireland's line-out went extremely well defensively against Scotland today. What were the battles like against Paul over the years? You know, he would have been a fair bit older than you. Would you have known much about him before you played him, and how did that go?
Yeah, obviously knew a lot about him. I mean, I watched him when I was still a youngster. Massive respect for him. I think he was, his battles was probably more against Victor and Bakis and those guys. I played against him at the end of his career. But yeah, great man. Obviously, I had good stories about him off the field also, just about his professionalism and type of guy he is. And yeah, you can see off Ireland how well they're doing in the lineup.
What did you take from that Irish game, actually? I think you said you're watching the game before we came on. Obviously, with the Lions just around the corner, is there any guys that stood out? You know, obviously, the likes of James Ryan, who has really broke onto the scene the last number of years, and he's in your position. He's already a real leader in Ireland, and, you know, hopefully for him, if he stays fit, realistically, he will be going on the Lions. Would you be aware of the likes of him and others in the Irish pack?
Yeah, I think one thing I probably learned tonight watching the game is that I can't just run onto Tad Furlong and tackle him. He might step me. He's like a really mean stepper there. But no, yeah, obviously for the Lions, they have a great lock option. Guy like James Ryan. Scottish locks, English locks there. So much options. So obviously for us as a box, it's a bit more difficult to analyze. Just have to look at the individuals. But I mean, there's some great players. Everyone eating form in the Six Nations. And I must say it's exciting. Today's game and yesterday's game, France versus England, was two really exciting games to watch.
Yeah, they were. Speaking of those stories you're on to Marcel about, Chris, you mentioned that he said that something about text messages that were being exchanged. What's that about?
Yeah, but another thing that Marcel just mentioned, which is just a wonderful thing about rugby, is obviously when you get to play against your friends from different teams. So whenever you were obviously with the Stormers and he's with the Sharks, and you would have, leading into a match, he was saying you would have been constantly texting and giving each other, you know, a bit of crack. But he was mentioning that even, like, you know, right up to the morning of a game, you were still texting each other saying, you know, the first time you come down my channel, you're getting absolutely emptied, or, you know, a bit of crack back and forth. And he said there was once that he remembered where you had tried to arrange a gentleman's agreement so yous would take it easy on each other. And I said that must be a blatant lie because there's no way that Marcel could see a and Eben Epsibeth are going to take a gentleman's agreement on each other. There's just no chance that was ever going to happen.
Yeah, no, there's no chance of that. I actually remember, I think before one game, Luke, me and Ime have this thing, the movie Dumb and Dumber. That's probably, when me and Ime are together, that's probably us too. And also with Mr. Bean, we also enjoy him quite a lot. So before games, we normally used to send each other clips, like just try and make each other laugh. But also when we get onto the field, I mean, it's quite serious. I actually, when we play against each other, I always try to line myself up against him. And don't know why it's my best friend, but you just try and eat him. Maybe that's 5% harder than any other guy. But no, it was great battles. And I mean, those times, Sharks as a Stormers, it was always a great game, I must say. Would have loved to play him here in Europe, Ulster versus Toulon. Don't know if we'll be able to get that opportunity because he's heading back home. But great man, and always better to have him on your team than play against him because he's an unbelievable person and he's a warrior on the field.
Eben, there was two other players you mentioned in a different answer, Victor Matfield and Bakis Bota. Obviously two world-class players for such a long time. Is there anything specific that you would have learned from those two guys as you were coming up through the ranks in South Africa?
Yeah, obviously, I mean, Victor and Bakis throughout the rugby world, everyone knows them. I think probably the guy who I learned the most from was Andries Becker, because he was at the Stormers when I was a youngster. So, I mean, I haven't even played for Stormers yet. Came from Varsity Cup into the Western Province under 21 mix, and then the following year I was in the Super Rugby team, and he told me, like, learned me just so much of lineouts, but not only that, like tackling stuff and just mental stuff. So I must say, on my career as a lock, I think he probably had the biggest influence on my career, and yeah, also for me, he was a great man and an unbelievable player.
Speaking of influence on a career, and you know, rolling back to 2019, we had Peter Steph de Toy on last week, and we were talking about that World Cup win, and you know, what a huge moment in your career, surely the biggest so far. But really, it seemed like the coaching ticket that you guys had was definitely a key to that. You know, we had our own Felix Jones, who went over, who got brought along with Razzie Erasmus. But in terms of Razzie Erasmus, how have you found him as a motivator? Because he seems like the type of coach that does delegate the rest of the coaching to other staff members, but an extremely good talker and motivator for his teams.
Yeah, look, the only reason why I can't delegate is because he has, I mean, the best around him, a guy like Jacques Nienaber, unbelievable in defense. Felix, I was actually, when he came in just before the World Cup, I wasn't so sure. Is it good if a new guy comes in? But I mean, he came in and the guy just doesn't stop working. And like, whatever he says, whatever he talks about, he always talks sense. Guy like Alet, Matt, everyone was just good. And then obviously you're talking about Rossi getting us up for games. I mean, there's no one that can get you up for a game like Rossi. He was really good. Just the way, his ways of doing things. And also, like, with coaching also, if there's ever something that pops up in his head, or I remember him taking the forwards one day for a mauling session, not on the field bashing each other, but actually go sit in a room and just talk about stuff, and just like the input he gives. He's an unbelievable coach. And yeah, I think, like you said, just before, you probably saw some of those clips where he's talking before a game. I think he really got the guys up for the games.
Even one thing I always found at Rassi was that no matter what the situation, or a win or a loss or a draw, he always found a way of presenting to the squad and saying the best possible things that can get you motivated, or always knew the right things to say at the right time. Again, what you said, Jack, I found that Jack was the glue that kind of held it all together. Jack was like Rassi's man on the ground, and I suppose, was that a similar environment, what you would have found 18 months leading into a World Cup when they joined as a coaching ticket?
Yeah, exactly. Jock is obviously he can be on the side of the pitch also, so you probably know him screaming next to the pitch and shouting out orders. But yeah, exactly what you said. Jock just handled everything. Obviously, his main thing was defense, and then Rossi was just like this, the puppet master, just doing everything right, getting everyone up for when it mattered. As long as you're up for the game, those 80 minutes, you can do whatever you want in a week, but those 80 minutes, if you must perform, then you must do it. So, yeah, I mean, you worked with them, and you know how, I mean, they're special coaches.
Yeah, and another former coach of ours, as you mentioned there, Alid Walters, the strength and conditioning coach, would have followed soon after the two lads. And what kind of impact would Alid have had with the national side?
Yeah, he's a good man. Obviously, takes his job very seriously. But when he's not busy doing his job, he's such a good man for the team. He's always a laugh. Obviously, being of us trying to speak Afrikaans, just his pronunciation of words was just funny. And I think he really gets the players. He knows when to push them into the red and when to hold back a bit, when to tell the guys, listen, next week is hard, then maybe at the end of the week we can have a couple of beers together. I think which is important, that balance, and he brought that. I still speak to him a lot, asking for programs and stuff. Yeah, no, he's a great man, and like I said, he can really push the guys. Remember one game against, I think that test against New Zealand, 2018. It was the Wednesday training session, and everyone was a bit jokey, almost in a good vibe, and he just lost it in the warm up, going off at us and shouting, "What am I missing? What's going on?" And I just told him, "You're missing a good vibe," and just everyone just started cracking up. And I think he also just had a laugh. Yeah. But no, he's a really good conditioner.
And this Lions tour as well, which, you know, everyone is so excited about with the way COVID has gone, and there's been question marks over it, and there's probably still question marks about where it might be. And I suppose from you talking to your other South African teammates, what would be the feeling on if it didn't actually take place in South Africa, even though there'd be no crowds?
Yeah, look, I think we had the point, our last game was in 2019, in the final against, so that point where we just want to put on the green and gold shirt. I told someone earlier, we don't care if we play in Pakistan or in India or Australia, New Zealand, it doesn't really matter. As long as we can put on the green and gold again and play for South Africa and try and make the people at home proud, I think that's what we want. So obviously there's rumors, I mean, we all read the media, there's rumors about Australia, rumors about the UK, and then obviously best scenario for us will still be in South Africa. But I think everyone just feels, all the guys, the coaches, we just want to get back on the pitch. First of all, just get to know each other again. Obviously, there's some new coaching staff who's in there, a guy like new conditioner and so on. So we just want to get to know everyone and spend some time together, and then obviously make memories on the field, which is probably, yeah, the most important in my play of the game.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement that the main thing is it just goes ahead now and it doesn't really matter where it is. But I suppose there's a couple of steps for you and other players before that happens. And I suppose you got that, everyone got notified last week, but you got that easy draw against Leinster in the quarterfinal of the Champions Cup. Are you happy with that?
Yeah, easy draw. No, it's a good one, I must say. I think I haven't really, I got here my first season and we were in the Challenge Cup, and now this season I played one game against Sales Sharks in the Champions Cup, and then obviously Scarlets didn't go away and the rest of the group stages didn't happen. So actually excited, measuring up against one of the best teams in Europe, against Leinster. So obviously lots of Irish players in there, so it's going to be a great match. Yeah, one we'll be looking forward to, and one we're going to have to prepare well for, because we know that Leinster will be very well prepared and they'll be ready for us. So, yeah, it's up to us to just bring it and be at our best that day.
Yeah, promises to be a great game. thanks a million for coming on the show, Eben. It was really, really great to chat to you. But just before we let you go, would you be able to tell us what your favourite jersey swap ever was after an international match? Who was it with?
I think there's probably in my one house up in on the West Coast. I actually have when I bought the house, I wanted to, on the stairs as you go up to the second level, I wanted a jersey of each country from the rugby championship. So I managed to swap with the Argentinian lock, Australian and New Zealand. So I mean, that was quite good swaps. I think a special one for me was Broadest from New Zealand. He texted me once on Instagram and told me he would like to swap. I think he never got an opportunity after the game to swap with me. And when I ever come to New Zealand, if I can bring a jersey with him, he would like to swap with me. So that was quite a special swap for me. Then in the World Cup final, I managed to swap with Mauro. So yeah, I put that up in a nice frame, the two number four jerseys playing in the World Cup final. So I think I've swapped with some. Every swap for me is special. I think if I have to point out a couple, that's probably the ones that stand out.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.
Again, we'll sit down with James, and obviously there's others as well that we need to sit down with and keep educating them regarding what international football is all about. There are guys that are in there that are very young as far as their experience is concerned, but to come up here, for anyone to come over here and experience a win at Murrayfield is something that they'll be proud of. I'm sure they'll look back on. But as far as progressing James's game, I suppose we'll help him like we'll help everyone else as well.
Plenty of other rugby at the weekend, and another brilliant game, if not the game of probably the championship so far, between England and France, and England just edging it out. And for me, before we actually get into the nitty-gritty of a few of the scores, like, what did you think of the try that was given by Joy Neville? But what was your opinion on it for England?
Well, so first,
like, won the game, really.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the first thing is that Joy Neville, I think, fair play. Like, she's refereed me a few times. I think she's a great ref, and I think, like, she took her time and she made the call, and I think you just have to move on quickly with it. I think that the most disappointing aspect, I think, firstly, is that England had penalty advantage. So even if they hadn't have scored, I think they would have had another chance to go at it. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the biggest talking point is how poor the French fringe defence was there. I think it was the two reserves, number 19 and 20, were like Levan and Aldred in the face before had just emptied one of the English, whoever was picking going from the English player. And then the two reserves were just, when they're folding around, they're so slow, so sluggish. Their body position, they were up high. And you're right on your try line. If you're on your try line, it is 3-point stance. It is, you know, putting your head where it shouldn't be to go meet them. And if a Toji's going to pick and go that quickly, you've got to win the race. So I think that even if England didn't score that time, and there's a picture going around social media where apparently it looks very clearly that he's got it down, but apparently it's his shoulder. You know, fine margins, you know. And the bottom line is, if they didn't score that time, would they have scored in the next? You know, if would they have tapped and went, or would they have gone and line out again, had another go? But I think
I think that's not the point, though. You know, I think that the referee asks a question and says, you know, so his question to her was, I don't think it was a try. Is there any reason that you can award it? And she looked at it and she overturned that decision and gave it. And I don't think there was conclusive enough evidence to say it was a try, because there was no close up. And I think it's such a big decision. And at the end of the day, the angle that where it was zoomed in, it did look held up. And that's fine, they had advantage, but they still have to kick to the corner. They still have to win the ball. I think it's, I don't think it was a great game of rugby, and England were probably deserved winners with the way they played. But the French, like, when they got going in the first half there, it's a pretty beautiful thing to watch. Like, I think they're building something great, but the back three was just unbelievable.
They're incredible, yeah. Brice Delaine coming back in at full back, and with Teddy Thama and Pueno coming back from injury, you know, it's just like it's firepower everywhere. Mm. Fakitau came back in for this game, and we all like he's one of the best centres in the world at the moment, and he punches those little holes to allow these lads to run into. And if you give him a little bit of space, you see Teddy Thama gets a little yard down the wing, chip over the top, and Dupont's able to finish with ease. You know, they're playing with great flair, great heads up rugby, and they always play the opportunity that's seen in front of them. Any chance they get to break out of their system or their attacking platform, they will, and they'll attack the opportunity they see in front of them.
Yeah, and then obviously in the other game, not forgetting Wales and Italy, and you know Wales put in a big performance against you know a disappointing Italian side. This whole Six Nations, unfortunately, again, but. Who would have thought that Wales now, at this stage, like could be in a position to win a Grand Slam from probably what we were all thinking at the start? It's you know, hats off to them for putting themselves in this position.
Yeah, definitely. Look, Wales with the star players they have and the experience that, especially the core of their team, you know, their spine, important position, every position is important. But you know, your hooker, Ken Owens, Faltoy, you know, Dan Bigger. Liam Williams, a fullback. You know, real core of that Welsh team or experience. Alan Wynne-Jones. If you have those names in your team, you can never rule. You can't rule a team like the Wales out. And then obviously with Zammit and Adams, the two, you know, things are happening around them. You know, it's amazing to see like so many young wingers. When they come on the scene, like the things just happen around those players. So you just want to get the ball to those types of guys as much as possible. So yeah, I think like obviously Italy, so disappointing. You know, it's a given 50 points now, isn't it, at the moment? And you know, you give an honourable mention to you know a few of their forwards. Your man Negri, I think you know, he just keeps on. You know, those the Italian forwards, they keep on turning up. They keep on knowing that they're going to get on the back foot, but they keep turning up. And yeah, it's very difficult. Where, you know, for Italian side now, it's just really difficult, isn't it? Like, where do they go? How do they really improve? But Wales, yeah, they just the start of the championship, winning by luck, which you needed a lot of luck, and they got their luck with the red card incidences. And then, but they are growing. They are getting better. And next week's going to be, you know. To win in Paris is obviously tough, but if there's one team that you back at the moment, you know, you've got to say that they can go and do it.
Yeah, now they're firing on all cylinders. It definitely makes for great watching next week, obviously from an Irish and English perspective, with that kind of that pivotal match between those two teams. I think it will be a cracker between Wales and France. But we're going to move on to Munster. Munster played the Scarlets at the weekend as well, and Joey Carberry returned and he picked up a man of the match performance in really, really tough conditions down in Thomond Park. What did you make of that? Do you think that it could be, you know, could it be out of the question to think that he could be in the mix leading into the final against Leinster in the Pro 14?
Absolutely not. I think Munster will do everything they can to ensure he's game ready going into a final. Obviously for Munster fans and Irish fans alike, it's a welcome sight to see him back on the pitch and back playing well, you know, to be, I know, first-hand to try and come back after a year out of rugby, it's incredibly hard to get your feel and your rhythm back, and Joey seems to be slotting back in seamlessly. Look, he kicked 4 from 4 in like atrocious conditions really, from the side, a couple from the touchline. A nice break for set up Shane Daly's try, and he looks very composed and control the game really well. At the moment, Munster are probably spoiled for choice at 10. JJ Henry's been going so well. Joey back in the scene, young Ben Healy coming through, and then even younger again, young Jack Crowley coming through the ranks as well. So Munster are they're spoiled for choice, and you know, I suppose it's a first time in a long while they have been.
Thanks to everybody for watching and listening. A big thank you to our producer Pat, Paul, Dermot, and Anthony. This has been House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe.
House of Rugby Ireland, here on Joe. Game changed.